morning, everyone. I'm used to using this kind of a stand. Usually when I use it, there's a tuba behind it, and then I'm behind the tuba. But I think I can make it work in another way today. Today I'd like to spend a few minutes talking with you about a very precious gift that God has given us. And some of you, probably when I mention gift, your immediate thought is, well, he's probably talking about the gift of salvation. And that's certainly a wonderful and marvelous gift. That's not it. And then you may be thinking, well, he's probably going to get into the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And those are precious gifts. But that's not it either. What I'd like to talk with you today about is a very precious gift, and sometimes we don't even think about it. We kind of take it for granted. It's the gift of time. It's a very precious gift that God has given us, and so many times we can overlook it. There are a few verses that we have up on the screen, and I'm going to read a little bit more of that out of Psalm 90, and I'm reading from the ESV, and I'm going to just start in verse 4 and read a few verses going on that deal with this whole idea of time, starting in verse 4. For 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. You sweep them away with the flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and it is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. And then down to verse 12. So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. And then Ephesians 5, 15 and 16 tell us to look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, for the days are evil. And if anybody has any doubt about the evil of the days, just pick up a newspaper, turn the TV on, which I'd rather not do, and you'll get that idea very quickly. Well, I wonder how many times in the past week or month, I'm talking now to those of you who have young children, mainly, I wonder if you've said sometimes, hurry up, let's go, hurry up, let's move it. Or you might think of another thought that you've had, gee, if I had a little more time, if I just had a little more time, I would do, you can fill in the blank. I'm sure all of us could put something in that blank. And I include myself in that. And a lot of the things that we say and think have to do with what we perceive as a lack of time. We don't seem to have enough time. We run from one thing to another, from one place to another. And how many times do we end a day? And gee, you look back, and I should have done that. And I'll relate to the tuba again. As a tuba player, as a musician, if you're going to do anything on a musical instrument, you have to practice every day, or most days. And how many times, I'd rather not count, I get to the end of the day, it's getting close to bedtime, and I say, gee, I haven't practiced today, and I'll pay for it tomorrow. And there was a saying sometime, it was a famous musician was asked about practicing and what happens if you don't practice. And he said, well, if I don't practice one day, I'll notice it. If I don't practice 2 days, the audience will notice it. So that's one of those things we can do when we have an idea of time. So I hope today we might gather a few ideas about how God views time. And that may help us to know, and it may help me to know how we can use that precious gift a lot better. One of the things that we think about is walking as wise people. We should be awake and watching. And there's the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. And I won't take the time to read that now, but we know about the virgins that did not take oil for their lamps and they ran out. They didn't plan ahead. They didn't know that the time was getting past them and they ran out of oil and they didn't make any plans ahead of time. We sort of take granted the fact that, well, you know, tomorrow will go along pretty much like today did. You know, if we've had a week that's gone a certain way or a day that's gone a certain way, we don't really think necessarily that the next day or the next week is going to be much different. But then sometimes, and some families, the Reardon family, others, and in my own life, my brother passed away suddenly about 6 weeks ago, our world can turn upside down and things can change very suddenly. And we are not always, how can we be prepared for it? There's a story I remember reading in a book. It was a book about the history of music, and it was a book about a story about the early Christians in the century after Jesus, and they were in a time and a place where they were undergoing persecution, and on a certain day of the week, they would meet, and many times they would have to meet in a cave or some kind of a cavern, and they would have to hide out because they knew they could be attacked, they could be persecuted. And these people had a sense, a very real sense, that Christ could return at any time. They really felt that his return was imminent, and they lived accordingly. And there's a thought sometime that we have about how this can all happen. And what would happen if we knew that God was going to return, that Christ was going to return today? There's a story I remember reading just recently about Francis of Assisi. Francis of Assisi was a monk. He's a saint in the Catholic Church, and he's the patron saint of ecology. I believe Pope Francis recently made him not only the patron saint of animals, but the patron saint of ecology. He was known as someone who had a great love for animals, and he was known by many people that he preached to the birds, and the birds would listen to him. They would be quiet. They'd quit chirping, and they'd listen to him. And he saw that in great contrast to the people he preached to who kept talking, and they didn't pay much attention to him. But he was hoeing in his garden one day, and one of his friends came up to him and said, "Francis, what would you do if you knew that Christ was coming back tonight?" And Francis said, "I would finish hoeing my garden." And he was ready. I have another, an anecdote. I had a very wonderful person in my life, my Aunt Janet, who was a great saint in the Lord. She passed away, went to be with the Lord at the age of 94, about 3 years ago. And I remember talking with her many times about the fact that she really believed that we were in the last days, and she believed that the Lord could come back at any time. And she lived her life accordingly. And it was really a great inspiration to those of us. Now, there are some people today around us who they have a sense that we're in the last times, that things are winding up, that things are coming to an end. Just as an example of that, many of you have maybe encountered the Jehovah's Witnesses who come to your door. And wrong though they are, and misguided though they are in many ways, that group has a real sense that we are in the final days and that things are coming to an end. And it's something that we might think about sometime, that, you know, maybe we who are among the redeemed ought to have some of that zeal. Well, there's another thought that we have, that we need to have the right attitude toward time. And sometimes we look for cause and effect right away. We want fast food, instant mashed potatoes, instant rice, instant credit. Go to a bank, you know, 15 minutes, car insurance. We want everything to happen quickly on our schedule. And it doesn't always happen that way, because Psalm 90, verse 4 tells us that, as we've read, 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or a watch in the night. And one of the things that can happen is sometimes with the misuse of time, we can make snap judgments. And snap judgments about things, snap judgments about people. And I have to confess that sometimes in my life I've made some quick judgments about people that turned out to be wrong. We make judgments sometimes on the basis of how somebody looks or how somebody's dressed. And there's a story that goes something like this. I don't know if it's true, but it certainly is an interesting story. There was in the 19th century, a Bishop Potter, who was an English, I don't know if he was an Anglican bishop or what, but anyway, he wanted to go to America, so he booked passage on a ship, and he took one of the lower-priced packages on the trip, which meant you rented a place, you rented a cabin, but you would also have somebody else who would join you. There'd be a cabin mate. So Bishop Potter, he boards the ship, he checks in, and so forth. He goes to his cabin, and he meets his cabin mate. And immediately there was something about this guy that didn't look right. He just didn't think he looked right. So knowing that, he thought, I better make some preparations. So he took his gold watch, he took a lot of money that he had in his billfold, some other valuables, up to the ship's purser where they have a safe. And he said to the purser, you know, I would like you to keep these things for me until the trip is over, because I went into my cabin and I saw my cabin mate, and I didn't quite like the looks of him. So he checked the goods in. The purser looked at him, and he said, well, you know, that's very interesting, because about a half hour ago, your cabin mate came up and said the same thing about you. So we can sometimes make very wrong judgments about people. And although I didn't really plan to do this one, I'll just mention this short example out of my own experience. Several years ago, I heated the house with wood. And I was working with it every so often with a chainsaw. I had to cut up logs. And I was doing that one day, and I was running low on chainsaw gas. So I had to go to a gas station in town. Now, for those of you who know where the A1 Chinese restaurant is across from Big Guys, Five Guys, I guess it is. That was a gas station many years ago. So I was in there, and I had grease and sawdust all over me. I had the oldest clothes I have. You know, I looked like a derelict. And I was pumping gas into a container, and this woman pulls up in a car, I think it was a Lincoln Continental, very well-dressed, and she looked out of the window for a couple of minutes, and then she got out of the car, and she started calling me a list of names that I have never been called before or since. And I couldn't figure out what was the matter with this woman. And it only took me a few minutes afterward to realize she thought I was a gas station attendant in the days when you were still getting people to pump your gas, and I was ignoring her. But she made a quick judgment, and if she had gotten to know me, I think she would have realized I wasn't really that bad. I think, anyway. So we have those things happen every now and then where we will make a snap judgment, and that judgment that we make is not the real one. So we need to have the right attitude toward time. God has his timetable, and we need to be aware of what that is. We need to be aware of God's timetable and act accordingly. Does God ever change his timetable, change his plan to adapt to changing circumstances? Now, we know that God is unchangeable. We know his nature is eternal. His nature is unchangeable. But yet, there are times when God will change some of the plans. And there are just a few examples I'd mention. Nineveh's example. Jonah was told to go through Nineveh and just give the message, yet 40 days and Nineveh will be destroyed. Well, he didn't like that. He didn't want to give that message. He took a detour, and we all know what happened to him. He had some time to think in 3 days in a dark place. And so God did change his plan. The people relented. He delayed his judgment on what happened. And afterward, Jonah didn't like it much. You know, he was upset because of the fact that God didn't really come down on those people immediately. There's an interesting story that I find in Jeremiah, the episode of the potter and the clay. If you have the ESV Bible in the pew, it's on page 646. And it's a story about the potter and the clay. And I'd just like to read some of those verses, beginning in the first verse. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, arise and go down to the potter's house. There I will let you hear my words. So I went down to the potter's house. There he was working at the wheel, and the vessel that he was making of the day was spoiled in the potter's hand. And he reworked it into another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to do. Then the word of the Lord came to me, O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter has done? Declares the Lord, behold the day in the potter's hand, so you are in my hand, O house of Israel. If at any time I declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will pluck it up and break it down and destroy it, and if that nation concerning which I have spoken turns from evil, I will relent of the disaster that I had intended to do to it. And if at any time I declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will build up and plant it, and if it does evil in my sight, not listening to my voice, then I will relent of the good that I had intended to do to it. Now therefore, say to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, this says the Lord, behold, I am shaping disaster against you and devising a plan against you. Return every one of you from his evil way and amend your ways and your deeds. So we can see that God will change his plans sometime depending on how we act and how we react. And I notice many places in the Word where there will be the if and then. God will say, if you will do this, then I will do that. So we can see how God changes his plans. Let's look just very briefly at a passage out of 1 Kings that talks about God's word to Solomon along the same subject. 1 Kings, chapter 6, verse 11. Now the word of the Lord came to Solomon concerning the house that you are building. If you will walk in my statutes and obey my rules and keep all my commandments and walk in them, then I will establish my word with you, which I spoke to David your father. And I will dwell among the people of Israel and will not forsake my people Israel. So there's the if and then. Now, we need to make some use of time, make some use of opportunities. A lot of times we'll do things during the course of a day that just go along with the day, things that don't amount to much, regular tasks of living. And a lot of times there's a sense when we can trade in something that's not, it's okay, it's something we have to do to get through the day. But maybe there's a better use of that time we could do. And I'm just wondering, is there somebody you might know, maybe who's going through a tough time? I guess we can think of that today. Is there somebody who could use a phone call? Is there somebody you know out there who's going through a serious financial problem? Maybe they're going through an illness, some issues like that. Could they use a visit? And is there something we can trade in? Maybe we could give somebody a word of encouragement. Pick up the phone, call somebody, give them a word of encouragement. And many times we can do that. What are some of the things where we can make use of opportunities where sometimes we'd like have an idea we should be doing something, but there's something else that eats up time? There's sometimes where people can actually work too much, and they can work to the point and do some kind of work that overwhelms everything else. Here's an anecdote that I'll share with you. This is how you join a club which is known the Coronary and Ulcer Club. I don't recommend that anybody does it. Here are some principles in that club for members. You have to have, if you're going to be a member, this is what you have to do. Your job comes first. Forget everything else. Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays are fine times to be working in the office. There won't be anybody else there to bother you. Always have your briefcase with you when you're not at your desk. This provides an opportunity to review completely all the troubles and worries of the day. Never say no to a request. Always say yes. Accept every invitation somebody gives you. Never say no. All forms of recreation are a waste of time. Never delegate responsibility to somebody else. Do it all yourself. If your work calls for traveling, work all day. Travel all night so you can keep that 8 o'clock in the morning appointment. And then finally, no matter how many jobs you are always doing, remember you can always take on one more. That's how you can join that famous club, and I hope none of us happens to do it. I wonder how many times people have missed opportunities because of laziness. There one time several years ago was a student who was a Crane student, and he roomed at our house. And Kay, my wife, was very puzzled at the fact that this guy never seemed to get up and around until about 10 o'clock in the morning. And he would go over to school and go to classes or whatever he had to do. And so he asked me one day, he said, Doc, that's what they called me, he said, I have my juries coming up in voice, and I'd like you to pray for me. And I said, yeah, I'll pray for you, but there's a condition I'm attaching. You need to get up. You can't be around just lazing, laying around until 10 o'clock in the morning. You get into the practice room, and after I see that you're in the practice room at 8 o'clock in the morning practicing for a couple weeks, I'll pray for you. So I guess he must have practiced enough because he did pass his juries. It seemed to work out. Walking carefully involves following the Lamb wherever he goes. It's interesting that we had a couple of examples in the sharing today about following. Pat was mentioning about dancing and in the feet and following her, your father's feet, I think. And then we sang one of the hymns, I've decided to follow Jesus. And so it's interesting how the Holy Spirit weaves elements together, and these things come together in a service. My grandfather, Albert Hugler, who came over from Switzerland in 1903, was a Swiss mountain guide. And he guided many people through the Alps, through these mountain paths and passes. And some of the stories he told were really interesting. He described how it's some of these narrow trails he would take people along, and how those people literally had to follow him, and they literally had to follow in his footsteps. Because if you looked to your right, you know, and you went about a foot over to the right, stepped in the wrong way, you'd probably drop over about 100 feet. So he had some pretty interesting stories. And I remember in his old age, one time we were just a bunch of kids, and he was living, we went to visit him and grandma and his farm in western Pennsylvania. He took us one day on a hike through some pasture land and a couple of miles through some wooded area to this reservoir that fed this town where he lived. And I'll tell you, this guy was in his mid-70s. We were probably between 8 and 12 years old. We had a tough time keeping up with him. He moved right along. But he had to walk carefully. We had to walk carefully. And sometimes we should walk a little more carefully. We need to watch. We need to watch where we're going. And we need to that passage in Revelation about following the Lamb wherever he goes. Now, as we come toward a conclusion, I'd like to ask the musicians to come forward, and we'll be singing a final hymn in a few minutes as I bring this to a close. And the last few things I'd like to talk about are just the fact that it's foolish and dangerous to waste time or squander time. It's a funny thing how sometimes people have a strange idea, though, about what's wasted. And what's wasted to one person may be precious to another. Just one quick anecdote. There was a famous Charles Francis Adams. He was a political figure in the 19th century, and he kept a diary. And one day he entered, "I went fishing with my son today, a day totally wasted." His son, Brooke Adams, also kept a diary, and he made this entry: "Went fishing with my dad today. The most wonderful day of my life." The father thought he was wasting his time, but his son saw it as an investment of time. And the only way to tell the difference between wasting and investing is to know what one's ultimate purpose is in life and walk accordingly. So we find that the days are evil. We've already talked about that. Time is irrevocable. You can't change. You can't make time go backwards any more than you can expect the Niagara River to go backwards up over the falls. So that's something that I think we all need to think about. And my prayer would be today that I and you can just take a look at time. Take a look from God's perspective. Take a look at what we do in the course of a day and just see, in light of what God has shown us in his word, what we can do to make better use of what he's given us. And we'll think about that.